Yo, welcome. Welcome to episode 24 of the Educated Guest Podcast. It's Rodrigo and myself in the house today, and we got a special one for him, do we not?
A special, special guest, Dr. Christopher Emden from Columbia University.
We had an amazing professional development here in Sweetwater yesterday, but wait, before we get to that, take a quick listen. Okay, if you know that sample, if you know that hip-hop sample, you get at me on Twitter, and I'll send you an Educated Guest Podcast t-shirt. It may not be your size, because all I got is L's and XL's, but I'll send you that t-shirt. Yo, Rodrigo, let's get back to this episode. It was so dope.
Dude, just such a great experience being able to listen and just share and talk and build with Dr. Emden. The man's he's brilliant, brilliant, brilliant.
Again, he comes straight to us from the Teachers College at Columbia University. His life, his passion, his doctorate is in urban education, specifically in the areas of math, science, and technology. Your man's an ambassador at the U.S. Department of Energy, which means that he has the daunting task of teaching science to Republicans. And beyond that, he just travels the globe teaching teachers how to be better at their craft with his concept of what's called reality pedagogy.
So sick. And I think what was one of the best things that was unique about the 2 days was it wasn't just about philosophy. Mm-hmm. It was practical information that you could use in your classroom tomorrow.
Absolutely, absolutely. If you're not familiar with him, or maybe you've heard his name but never seen his work, you're going to want to go on YouTube and check out his keynote at South by Southwest EDU last year. You're going to want to check out his TED Talk and then pick up his most sought-after book. It's called For White Folks That Teach in the Hood and the Rest of Y'all Too. He's the inventor of the hashtag HipHopEd on Twitter. It's a discussion that goes down every Tuesday, 9 p.m. Eastern, and by simple math, that's 6 p.m. on the West Coast.
There you go.
And with that, I say we get up into this episode.
Enjoy it. I hope you guys enjoy it as much as we enjoyed recording it. Mm. Have some fun, y'all.
All right, peace.
Rap addict. Flip on MCs like Rapmatics.
It's going.
Addict. Addict to
you
the
feel
flow.
Good?
Every time we go, know I got the flow. Okay, we go.
Dr. Chris is freestyling.
I love it. That's hard.
That's how we coming in.
I like it.
Episode 24 of the Educated Guest Podcast. It's your boy Zarf, a.k.a. Caesar Does It. I'm in the house with Rodrigo, of course, Mr. Underscore A-Y-Y-Y. Get at him on them Twitters.
What's up? What's up?
And we got a special, special guest. I'm hyped.
I'm hyped to be here too, fam.
I am hyped.
Yes, sir.
We have the amazing Dr. Chris Emden in the house.
What's up?
Brooklyn represent.
Brooklyn represent. BX represent. I do both boroughs. You know
you
what
do
I mean?
Both?
Yes, sir.
There you go.
Whoa. So we just came hot off of a PD, a professional development today with Dr. Emden, and we're mad hyped, but there's a lot of people that weren't there. And we want to get some of the content out there for them.
Okay.
As well as press you for some new questions, right?
That's essentially what's going on, but we still want to keep the grittiness of the Educated Guest Podcast.
Of course, of course. So we can't start this without asking Dr. Emden. I asked you earlier.
What's good?
You rearranged those in your head.
Oh, man.
Hold on. Should we go with the disclaimer first?
You want to go with the disclaimer?
Go with the disclaimer first. All right. Just to protect ourselves.
The opinions herein belong to ourselves, my guest, and Rodrigo.
Right.
And in no way, shape, or form do they reflect those of our district or any of the associations that we get down with. Now, having said that,
let's talk some shit.
All right,
Dr. Emden, you got to give us your top five.
Yo, I was telling y'all before, it's so hard to do a top five. Like, I could give you a top five 5 minutes ago that'll be different from my top five 5 minutes after, simply based on the fact that I'm consistently reevaluating my rubric.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
But there are always some cats that stay on there. So this is in no particular order. I will say, Jay-Z, Biggie, Nas, Doom.
Oof, Doom.
MF Doom.
The sneaker.
That's a sneaker in there, right? Kane.
Kane.
Kane, yeah. I think that's five.
You were the first on the podcast
to say Kane.
Yeah, that's the first
Definitely
one.
Definitely the first.
That's a shock,
that's
man.
That's the first one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We had several guests. Most of them do listen to hip-hop, but yeah, we've never heard Kane.
I've never heard Kane on the podcast.
And we've never heard Doom, of course.
And we've never heard Doom. That's
okay,
true.
So that's two new cats. So that's two new cats. Okay.
When you start messing with Doom, what was it?
I think, yo, I can't even remember my initial Doom track. It's like, he's always been that sleeper dude for me. Like, I'd be like, oh, Doom, nothing on the radio.
Yeah.
And then somebody would send me a track, and I'd be like, oh, like, what is this dude doing with words? You know what I mean? And so he's just been a sleeper, but a consistent sleeper that does magic with words.
Yeah,
you know what
So I'm ready to go right there.
That's you ready to go?
That's that one question that we needed to like
get out of the way.
All
right. Boom.
And now we can get on to educational content, right?
Just for a little bit.
Just for a little bit?
Just for a little bit.
People can only digest about 30 minutes on a podcast.
Morsels.
Morsels, exactly. Yeah. This is called chunking, folks.
So look, you dropped some jewels today, okay?
Yeah. Thank you, fam.
One of the things that I want to get out there to the people that weren't there, I want to hear the story. I want to hear the story about how you wanted to be a Wu-Tang member and how that came full circle
what
it means to our profession, to what you do.
Yeah, man. You know, the first thing to say about that story is, like, I'm a firm believer in educators being able to construct a vision of who they want to be as an educator and a vision for their own futures. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we don't talk enough about having the educators be full and whole people.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, how effective you want to be as an educator in the classroom? Yeah, like, what's your vision for yourself? And for me as a youngin', you know, as a teenager, like, I didn't care about being a professor. I wanted to be a member of Wu-Tang. Like, that was my goal. You know what I mean? Like, I went to school to spit bars at the cafeteria while someone was banging on the lunch table to spit something that I thought was on par with what meth could spit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, you know what I mean? Like, that was always my goal. And as a kid, I literally had a Wu-Tang poster in my room on the wall. And, you know, no disrespect to the Wu members. You know what I mean? Like, I love every
cool.
Wu member.
It's cool.
But my poster had You God in it. You know what I mean? And
you had all of them.
I had all of them in it. And to me, I felt like if we were supposed to go bar for bar, me and You God could battle and get it in. And on a good day, I might get a W.
I will take your place.
You know what I'm saying?
It was an even fight. I guess
So I was like, you know what? You God in my head was a little bit replaceable. And so I had cut out You God's face out the poster and replaced it with a picture of myself.
I love it.
In my Columbia hoodie. You know what I'm saying? And not the university, Columbia is the brand of clothing.
Yeah, yeah.
Boom.
And so, yeah, so, like, I really had this vision of myself as a Wu-Tang member. You know what I mean? And I to the point where, as a child, I put myself inside the Wu-Tang poster to try to be Wu. And what happened over the course of my life is that, you know, I ended up, you know, doing whatever I did in school and going through this route and become a scientist and an educator and all that, and come full circle in the sense that, you know, one of my major projects that I've been known for is the Science Genius Project.
Science Genius Project, yep.
Where, you know, we have young folks writing raps about science content and then battling each other to see who the dopest MC and scientist is. And that competition, you know, I brought to GZA from Wu-Tang. And another interesting story where, you know, me, GZA, and Neil deGrasse Tyson are at the Hayden Planetarium. I'm not trying to drop names. I'm just trying to tell a story.
You have perfectly earned the right to drop names.
I appreciate that, but I don't want to be the name
dropper.
You
kick it with these folks. You're not just name dropping.
I kind of, you know what I mean? So we in the Hayden Planetarium, and we kicking it, and I was talking to GZA about Science Genius, the concept around Science Genius, and he really dug it. And so we ended up going to schools across New York City. Like, literally, he'd come into school doing pop-up visits, spitting bars to the kids. He was like a co-teacher in many ways. And I remember us having this conversation. He's like, yo, this, like, you really spitting some Wu knowledge, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, dude.
And it was this moment where I was like, yo, did he just say I was like a Wu member? You know what I mean? You know what I mean? And it was almost like a full circle, like, as a youngin' wanting to be an MC, wanting to be a member of Wu-Tang and being able to do this academic work and this education work and being validated and kind of co-signed by one of the OG Wu members. And it's like kind of like my vision of myself as a 13-year-old came into fruition as a 30-something years old, yeah. But not as an MC, but rather as an educator, and which to me also says in many ways the connections between being an MC and an educator. Because in many ways, as an educator, I approach my work and my craft like an MC. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like I work on my bars like I work on my lesson plans. You know what I'm saying? I make sure my metaphors and analogies is on point. I make sure that when I'm spitting, I'm moving the crowd and I'm the master of ceremony of my classroom.
Yeah.
And so in many ways, as an educator, I am an MC. And as an MC who educates, I come full circle to get this sort of Wu approval. And you know what I mean? It's a beautiful thing.
The honorary member of the Wu-Tang.
That's
freaking sick, man. Yeah, that's freaking sick. One of the images that sticks out in my head from today's training was actually one of the first images I saw when you presented at Boost. Shout out to Tia Quinn for bringing you out to Boost in Palm Springs.
What up, Tia?
Five or six years ago, something like that, was the image of Native American students who were in front of a school who have basically been taken, their culture had been taken away from them, right? Tell us a little bit about that image. Tell us a little bit about why that is used and why that's so important.
You know, that image from 6 years ago in a presentation at Boost, I use at every presentation ever since.
That's what's up.
And people always be like, yo, you know, like, why are you using that same image? Because that image can never, like, you can't allow an image that's that striking to get played out.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's almost like, you know, boom bap never gets played out. No matter what happens in hip hop, it's like once you hear that original, that boom bap, original boom, boom, rap, like that beat doesn't get played out because it's the heartbeat of hip hop in many ways. And that image of these indigenous youth, these Native American youth, you know, in the 1800s at this school in California, and it's their class picture, and all you see is like the absence of joy.
Misery.
You see misery, and misery is attached to the process of learning and education. And then you go into...
Normalized.
It's normalized and validated misery.
You know what I'm saying?
It's like a societally accepted and validated like misery as a norm in the schooling process.
Right.
And to me, like in contemporary schools, we see the same phenomena. And I always say, you know, we can't heal a broken school system for black and brown young folks until we acknowledge the ways that that same school system has done that violence historically for other folks as well. And so that image reminds me of that. And it also connects back to this idea of urban youth as neo-indigenous. Because in many ways, not neo as in new indigenous, but undergoing new forms of oppression that are reminiscent of the practices that the indigenous populations have to undergo.
And if we can
make sense of what went wrong and what's been going wrong with those populations, it helps us to be more armed to be able to deconstruct how systems of oppression exist in contemporary education.
Right. And you know, it was a trip, dude. It was like, it's so, you see it in their faces and you see just how sad. Like, and how their culture had been taken away from them. And then you see it in the same students that you see today. And when you can't sit, you can't raise your hand, you told us a story today about students who they can't walk through the halls without having their shoulder on the wall.
Yeah. Like, I literally seen this in a school in New York City. And it's a school that folks send their babies to because they've been told that it's a better option than the existing school.
You're tripping.
Like, they're like, yo, you know, these New York City public schools is trash, my G. Like, this is the language. Look at your test scores. Yo, these test scores are so trash. Don't you want to send your kids to a better school? And so they play on the sort of, like, sentiments of young, of parents of color who want better.
Right.
Under the guise of better, they wrap up better. Like, they wrap up poor pedagogy.
Hyper-discipline.
Right. So that you have more offensive, more disrespectful, more flawed pedagogies wrapped up in pretty school uniforms.
Absolutely.
But it's presented as an alternative.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So now that they got the alternative, you know, these folks are screwing kids' lives up, and they double down on that prison pedagogy.
I'm looking for that image. There was an Angela Davis quote talking about students being super disciplined, schools being super disciplined, and all they're really doing is preparing students for prison.
Absolutely, without a doubt.
It's a trip. And
I mean, could you imagine having to walk down a hallway of your school with your shoulders touching the wall of the hallway? There's no rhyme or there's no logic behind it, except that I want to make sure that you know that I have control over you.
And that would not happen in a different socioeconomic environment. It wouldn't happen in
to rich folks, not at all.
You know what I'm
saying? Fam, like if that. It did, the parents would storm the building and take the joint over.
You know what I'm saying? So I was this. I just that image. It speaks so much to me. I mean, it's always been one of those things. That's why I hooked you up with that book, Tribe, by Sebastian Younger. Again, like there's so much of the tie-in between what we've done to the Native American peoples and how we're continuing to do it with young boys and men of color,
right.
young sisters of color,
right.
in our school systems. And we think it's like, oh yeah, it's cool. Kind of like, well, they're not. You know, they're getting disciplined. It's, you know, we're getting higher test scores. And again, under the guise of those things, we're destroying our young people, man.
And a big thing why I make those connections is this idea of erasure, right? So we've erased the experiences of Native American mm-hmm. populations in this country, just as we attempt to erase the oppression that schools are imposing on young folks of color today. Like we literally try to act like it doesn't happen.
Right.
And so when we're doing it right now, we're like, no one's erasing it. But dog, if you're using the same practices that were going on then and you've tried to erase that, what's going on now by ignoring the nuance of how it plays out is an attempt at erasure.
Ooh.
And so we can't allow these things to be erased, because if they become erased, then we can't deconstruct them.
Right.
And they simply become normalized.
Right. And it becomes accepted behavior.
And it becomes accepted. Exactly.
Right. That's a trip, dude. And so, you know, something else that was super poignant today and that I had considered, but I don't know that the people in the room today considered, but it was this empowerment of young boys and men of color and how that empowerment or the hyper-empowerment of young boys and men of color could lead to the acceptance of our young sisters of color being more docile.
Absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit more about
that?
I mean,
you know, people will advocate for equity and not care a lot about equity. Because equity is this idea of allowing every person to feel fully empowered and fully whole.
Mm-hmm.
And because of this sort of like systemic sort of like hyper-focus on ensuring that men of color are devalued,
mm-hmm.
we place a particular emphasis on ensuring that they are empowered.
Right.
And so we hyper-empower them at the expense of sisters.
Mm.
And so we invest fully into them. Like, you know, we have the Obama initiative that we talked about earlier,
My Brother's Keeper,
which is a phenomenal initiative. And it's like, you can't fully enact a My Brother's Keeper initiative if you don't make sure that the sisters are well kept as
right.
well. You know what I mean?
Right.
And we oftentimes feel as though like, no, we're focusing on guys right now. So let's not talk about the sisters at all. And I'm like, yo, bro, we all in this joint together.
Yeah.
And oftentimes what happens is that we get so distracted by ensuring that men of color have voice that we don't critique those same men of color who lacked voice and their enacting of practices that rob sisters of the same voice.
Yeah.
And how do we reconcile that tension? How do we then say that we are advocating for equity if we are
not
advocating for the full wholeness? And for me, it's about wholeness, like mm-hmm. the full wholeness of self-expression and agency for all young people.
Right.
And, you know, sisters in particular, man, it's like what happens is like if you get like we expect young black boys or young black and brown young folks to be able to be boys to be able to be like loud. Right.
Yeah.
But a sister who gets too loud, the angry black woman or the angry brown woman narrative is so strong and pervasive that becomes more dangerous, because you almost expect and normalize the boy to wild out a little bit. But a girl who speaks her voice, oh, why are you so angry?
Because
we want you to be the opposite of angry to them, which is docile, complicit, quiet, and only valued for how you look
right.
and how comfortable you make me feel. Like, it's a saying. It's like, you know, if you don't make me comfortable, I'll kill you.
Oof.
I mean, that's what it boils down to.
Right.
If you don't make educators comfortable, they will kill the spirit of the young person. And so when your spirit is killed, you learn to be docile. Docility is the indicator of the murder of your spirit. You know what I mean? When you can't fully be, then you just give up.
Yeah, and we talk about something that we've been talking about on the podcast and the expanded learning is this idea of it's no longer about the achievement gap. It's more about the engagement gap. But even more about the engagement gap, it's about the fulfillment gap.
Absolutely.
And so part of having that wholeness and having that understanding that narrative is super, super powerful.
One of my OGs, Gloria Lassen-Billings, like my OG, mm-hmm. you know, she talks about, she doesn't say achievement gap, she talks about educational debt. Because for every gap that there is academically, there's a debt that those young folks have been owed by the institution that allowed those gaps to happen. And so it's a matter of shifting frameworks. Like the idea of achievement gap alone on its own is a deficit lens.
Deficit lens,
because
yeah.
it perceived, remember I was telling y'all a story earlier about, you know, I was out in some really affluent school watching these kids try to rap.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, they got a rhythm achievement gap. They couldn't catch the beat for their life. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, you know, these idea of an achievement gap academically builds within it a perception that there's some academic lack in the individual,
right?
Rather than putting the onus on the institution or not having the ability to be able support to create them. A space to allow them to be fully
right.
to
or
fully
to get
be
the, yeah, to have the supports and opportunities
exactly.
to be fulfilled.
And Carlos Gonzalez in episode 22 spoke on that. He said, "We're the only institution where people don't get educated yet they can't come back and say, yo, you owe me something.
Right.
You owe me an education.
Give me my money back.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yo, it's that reclaiming my time philosophy, the Maxine Waters approach. Like,
Shout out to Maxine Waters. Yo, reclaiming my time.
You know what I mean? Like, that idea of reclaiming my time, it's not about, like, listen, you've taken up all this space advocating for what you want to. I have something to say, and so I'm going to stop you from continuing with that narrative, because at this point, I'm going to reclaim my time. And we got to reclaim our time within institutions.
Mm.
We got to have young folks have the agency to say, listen, from K through 12, you robbed me of me, so now I want my time back.
Mm.
Right? You know, as an 11th grader, I've gone through 11 years of oppression by the school system, so now you owe me to do right by me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, with the same kind of aggression, that aggression and sort of unapologetic way in which, you know, a Trump will say, you know, this is a bad newscast. They lying on me. Like,
it's fake news.
To be so unapologetic about arguing your point, we have to teach young folks to be as unapologetic about arguing for their voice.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that's why I love Auntie Maxine so much. Because,
Auntie Maxine.
You know what I mean? Because in many ways, she exemplifies like that one auntie who's just super ratchet. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And it's just going to say what she needs to say.
And let everybody know.
And we all need that. Yeah. Young folks need to be able to feel as though they are empowered enough to be able to advocate for what they need
mm-hmm.
in an unapologetic way, even at the expense of the comfort of a system and structures that do violence on them.
Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what's funny is that I'm sorry, Caesar, because I'm just, if you're going to hop in, you want me to?
It's not going to make the podcast. Don't worry. Just go ahead and talk.
I got the edits
regardless. Edit you right out,
edit
bro.
Me out.
It's
edit
just me
out.
And Chris
no.
today.
So the idea behind that, though, is like, not that behind that. It speaks to the idea also about what you talked about earlier today in terms of this false narrative around being humble.
Right.
So tell us more about that.
Mm. Look, folks of color throughout history have been able to be, you know, presented as less than who they are because they're told that they need to be humble.
Yeah.
Essentially, it's like it's not even about being humble. It's like you're taught that you should be appreciative of the opportunity to be welcomed by white folks.
Mm.
Right? So if they let you in, like let's say you graduate from high school or make it into college, you should be so thankful that they let you in.
We let you in, exactly.
That you should just not say anything at all and just be humble.
Yeah, yeah.
And what that does is that it robs you of your voice.
Yeah.
It robs you of your power. It robs you of your comfort. It robs you of your agency.
Yeah.
And when you're robbed of all those things, then you become a shell of yourself. And when you become a shell of who you authentically are, then you do like them girls we were just talking about, which is like, I just give you, a vision of me that you want.
Right. Right, right,
And once you do that, then you're too humble.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Sometimes humility strangles you and suffocates you.
Mm.
And it's not true humility.
Yeah.
Because
yeah, yeah.
true humility is not an act. It's not true humility is not robbing you of yourself.
Right.
True humility is simply the recognition that whoever you are, somebody is just as dope as you who might not be where you are. Because
mm-hmm.
they have the same luck, opportunity, and circumstances that you've had.
Them three words.
Yeah.
Them three words is dope.
Yeah.
And it's the luck, opportunity, and circumstance.
Yes, sir.
So tell me more.
Well,
it's so funny because like I'm trying not to like rehash the whole day, although it's kind of, but it's the whole conversation was interwoven around these consistent ideas.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so. This idea of luck, opportunity, and circumstance
and how you were able to make it versus maybe someone else who didn't get the luck, opportunity, and circumstance.
Like the recognition that I'm not so amazing for making it, and that it's not me, but it's simply a constellation of those three things.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I got a chance opportunity to have a mom who said, you know what, even though you ain't quite do what you need to do in high school, you got to go to college, so I'm going to make sure you drive down to the local college, right? That was, you know, that's an opportunity she provided for me, right? Yeah. You know, I had a circumstance that allowed me to be able to go away from the city for a little bit that helped me to be able to chill and get my mind right, to decompress, right? I had the luck of having to take a class by a professor who actually cared enough about me being me in the science lab. So those things are not, those aren't me. Like, I didn't construct the luck. I didn't construct the opportunity, nor did I construct the circumstance. I just got blessed enough to be put in those scenarios. But any person who came from my block has the same skill set, intelligence, and knowledge and IQ that I do. So I recognize that. I walk through the world every day with a recognition that I am not special by virtue of being me, but that those things happened to me and I should be thankful for them. And that if those things didn't happen to me and happened to somebody else, they would easily have the position that I do.
Right.
Like the idea to be able to kick it with Jizza and Neil deGrasse Tyson is not because I'm dope.
Yeah.
It's because I got lucky enough to have the opportunity to introduce Neil deGrasse Tyson at a graduation, who introduced me to Jizza. Like, it's not like I constructed that because I'm so popping.
And
other people who were put in those scenarios may have those things as well. And so humility is not me being like, oh, nah, I ain't popping. Like, I'm popping because I'm from the hood and I'm here.
By being me.
This is one thing I want folks to understand. You know, by virtue of being a person of color from a socioeconomically deprived space and to be alive and functioning and have a family is resilience. That should be celebrated. But your successes academically or intellectually or the credentials by institutions, that's all luck, opportunity, and circumstance, my G. So you can't let that go to your head, but you got to be proud of where you're from, right? You can't engage with folks saying, oh, thank you for letting me in, like they let you in. They ain't let you in. You ain't control my luck, opportunity, or circumstances, my G. I just happen to be here with you right now. And so, I you know, for educators, but also for young people, for them to understand that the situations that you're in that are challenging for you is not because you're not deserving of more. Like, your luck, opportunity, and circumstances just ain't kick in yet. But if you hold on for long enough, they always will.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
All right. I want to take this in a different direction.
Nah, man.
Sorry about that.
That was almost the perfect segue.
That's not going to make the podcast.
That's not going to make the podcast.
Yo, in your book, you talk about ciphers or cogens, right? And that's something that I know teachers can implement in their classroom if they got it like that, right?
Absolutely.
And we have a lot of teachers in our district right now that are doing talking circles. They're doing it with the whole class, but your concept of the cogen is a little bit different. And I want teachers to hear that because I think it's something that a lot of them could implement, right? Talk to me.
You know, educators, I always, you know, like if you're listening, and you should be listening because this podcast is popping out in these streets, you know what I mean? But, you know, the only way you get better at your craft is by allowing the students you're teaching to give you feedback on how effective you're being. And in a classroom with 30 students, the structure doesn't allow for that kind of intimate dialogue to get critical feedback in a way that you can ponder over, ask questions with students about what clarifications you need. Like, it's just not structured for that. So what I try to do and what I advocate for is these dialogues with young people outside of class, about class, with the goal of co-generating a plan of action for improving class.
Got you.
So the idea is that you're engaging in a consistent research practice with your students to make you more effective.
Improving the experience of being in class.
For each other. Because it's not just like, what can I do to be better? It's like, yo, but y'all, I'm struggling with this. What can you four do to help me be better?
Yeah.
Or what, you know? So it's essentially distributing power amongst a set, a core group of students, and then allowing them to work with you to reconstruct what the new norms are.
Right.
And once you do that, then you have new ammunition to deal with the 30 students that you have in front of you.
Right.
So, you know, and the ideal structure for that is so hip-hop. Yeah. If you study the cipher, you realize that the cipher does that automatically. So what do I do when I get the kids together? Well, look at the cipher. Get them all in a circle. Basic A1. You know, number two, create celebrations at after each moment of a poignant point. You know what I'm saying? You know, accentuate the story and the narrative. Mm. Have music in the backdrop. You know, have mutual eye communication and head nods and synchrony as the ways to have the nonverbal communication. So I don't got to write a textbook about the cogent dialogues because the hip-hop cipher shows us how to do it. So the role of the educator then, if you want to get these new tools, is to go into that world to study that tool and artifact and bring that back into the classroom. And so that's the stuff I'm going to share tomorrow. Yeah, it's like kind of nuance. You know what I mean? Like, because... Because the existing system does not provide a model for how to do that work.
Right. And it's funny because there's two points that are on that. It's like, one, teachers have to be comfortable letting go.
Right.
And typically, teachers are very type A. Things need to be in an order, blah, 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 blah. And then when things kind of flare out of control, they kind of lose their shit. And all of a sudden, it's just like, ah. But again, being uncomfortable with the uncomfortableness of it not going the way it's supposed to go.
Comfort with discomfort.
Comfort with discomfort.
You know what I'm saying? Understanding that community sometimes is built out of chaos.
Mm.
Right? And that you have to be able to be willing to accept what you perceive to be chaotic in order for you to get to community.
Right.
Because otherwise, you never get to community.
Yeah. And those little tools and tricks, you talked about it today, and hoping you could share a little bit more about it, is like that magic isn't just magic.
It never is, man.
It's but magic's beautiful, right? Oh, and it's awe-inspiring. But magic is just a set of tricks. So how can teachers use magic in their classroom?
Yo, you got to master your craft.
There you go.
You know what I'm saying? You know, to me, to MC, this goes back to hip-hop. It always goes
back to hip-hop. Come back to hip-hop, baby.
To be hip-hop, to be an MC, you are a master of your craft.
Mm.
You are a master of ceremonies.
Yeah.
And you move the crowd.
The crowd, right. Or move the classroom.
And so you move the classroom, you master the event, which is the classroom space, and you become a master of your craft. If you want to be a master of your craft, you got to study it.
Yeah.
So you study other folks who've perfected what you want to incorporate into what you do. Mm-hmm. Like, remember when I wanted to be an MC, like, I would write my rhymes, then I would just go study MCs. Right? Like, yo, how is Rakim putting double entendres in them? Like, why is he doing double rhymes in between the rhyme schemes?
Mm.
Right? So then I would go down and write down Rakim lyrics.
Just to see what it looks like.
Just to see what it looks like on paper.
Yeah.
Then when I construct my own, I try to model it after how he did that.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like, how does Meth do the, like, just, to, but it seems like a.
It's a pause
to catch your breath so you can have the breath control for the next bar. But if you go, it seems awkward.
Yeah,
so you turn it into a, which accentuates your swag, but you still got your breath control. You know, people think that all this is accidental, but it's a deliberate process to master your craft. So as an educator, you got to be like, yo, when I go, my transitions between my do now and my hands-on activities are not really lit. So how do I study how folks do transitions between spaces to get it perfected?
Right. You know what I mean?
And so it's about being critical about the nuances and thinking of teaching as a craft to be mastered. Then before long, you become a magician.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it looks like magic every time, but it's just because you've mastered your craft.
And it's so funny, man, because some teachers, that's work, and that's the work. And what frustrates me with some teachers is like they aren't willing to put the work in to be the master.
But they put work in on being trash.
Mm-hmm. They do.
That's the thing. Like, you spend time on these whack lesson plans that are not getting you any better.
You
spend time reading texts from these suckers who have deficit lenses on young folks of color on urban. So don't get it twisted. Even really ineffective educators spend a great deal of time being ineffective.
Mm.
So what do you want to spend your time on?
It requires
first a recognition of your ineffectiveness. But if you're so blind you can't see that you whack, then you can't get better.
You don't know what you don't know.
You don't know what you don't know, which is why every educator, no matter how great they think they are or how ineffective they think they are, needs to get that critical feedback on their teaching from the students, because the students will let you know if you're popping or you're not.
Students are real. They
always tell you the truth.
Game recognized game.
Always.
Kids snuff out a poser from a mile away, bro.
Always. But you need a mechanism to ensure that you're not a poser. You know what I mean? Like, and then you can master the craft, because they'll tell you where the gaps are, then you can fill in the gaps.
Okay.
So, I mean, you're kind of talking about, like, teachers watching other teachers, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You see somebody, you like their style. A lot of teachers in our district aren't willing to do that, right? We used to have this thing called lesson study back where I'm from, where we would see each other do the same lesson, right? Mm. And we would critique each other.
Yeah.
And I never thought about the transitions. I never really looked at those as a young teacher. But now I get it. Now we're in a district, though, where people don't really want to watch each other.
Right.
Nobody wants to say, that's a dope teacher. Let's go watch that teacher.
Ego.
Right. Because they don't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
No, they don't want to hurt their own feelings.
There you go.
That's what it is. You don't want to be exposed for being trash.
Yeah.
Look, and people look at me crazy like, why are you saying teachers are trash? Yo, it's trash. If you're in there every single day and nobody's popping in your class, nobody's learning something, young folks of color underperforming, you trash.
Straight
trash. Straight and somebody needs to tell you that.
Straight up.
You know what I'm saying?
And you have to recognize it.
You have to recognize that. Like, as a presenter, there are aspects of my work that I feel I need to work on. Like, I'm not that popping at certain things. I got to go reevaluate that. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with being honest. And to me, it's not just studying yourself. When we talked about this earlier today, it's also studying other folks who are effective at the things that you're not good at that may not be in the classroom.
Mm.
Right? The models for being effective as an educator does not necessarily come from other educators. Mm-hmm. They might come from some rappers.
Yeah.
They might come from some bus drivers. They might come from some cab drivers.
There you go.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so you have to be able to identify folks who have the skill set outside of your field of study so you can bring that in to perfect your skill set.
There you go.
You know what I mean?
This is dropping gems. I feel like right there, we need to take a break.
We need to take a break?
Let's take a 5-second breather just so we can catch it up. And then on the flip side, we'll get back to some education, we'll get back to some hip hop, and we'll get back to some sports.
I'm with it.
Because I know you with it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with it.
Yo, sometimes you just gotta go with a little Who Shot Ya by Biggie Smalls. Shout out to all my Sweetwater peoples that were in the 2-day professional development with Dr. Emden. I know you guys felt it. I know you guys understand it and you want to implement it. And that's what we're talking about here, okay? Implementing reality pedagogy. Dr. Emden just dropped one major tool, and that's code generative circles. And he's got 6 more tools to go. The discussion just gets more crucial from here, okay? Because it's like, how do you implement this as a teacher on a site level and on a district level? And we discuss what districts typically do wrong and what leadership needs to do in order to implement this properly. And we just take it left at the end, okay? I think we're going to get Dr. Emden to bust a freestyle. If you're challenged in hip-hop, that means we toss up a beat and your man just starts spitting rhymes, okay? And if you're a true MC, then you can do this. And I think Dr. Emden can hold his own. So we're going to get right back into this episode. Let's go.
Welcome back to the Educated Guest Podcast.
Episode 24, Dr. Chris Emden in the house.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
All right, so here's where we're going with this, man. You know, in my career, I've seen some pretty dope speakers, okay? Mm. I'm not going to run the list. And they always left me hella inspired. Mm. Like, damn, I want to go out there and do great things. And you did that for everybody in the house today.
Thank you, my wife
was in the house.
She
was inspired. But she had an important question that I always have seen all these speakers. It's like, okay, so how do I take that back to my classroom? What does that look like in my classroom? And we had already talked about co-generative circles. That's one thing that you can implement right away.
Yeah.
What does this look like?
And on each of the levels, though, too, 3 levels, right? What can a teacher do in the classroom level,
yeah,
on the school-wide level, and then in a district level? Because I'm sure you get this all the time.
Yeah, these are major questions and essential ones. You know what I mean? And like on a 2-day talk like I did today, I try to put the battery in your back early,
mm-hmm,
and then I try to make you thirsty for the tools, and then I try to give you the tools. Like, because if I give you the tools early, it gets lost in the sauce. Yeah. I got to create the thirst for it. It's all pedagogical,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I want to get you hyped,
yeah,
so that you'll be like, okay, now what? Then I'm like, yo, I got some drinks for you,
yeah,
right?
Folks are in suspense right now tonight.
They're like,
they're gonna get some tomorrow. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's the plan. Genuinely, it is the plan. And so you do the same thing in the classroom. Like, you tell the students a story, and then you stop at the cliffhanger.
It's cold.
It's cold-blooded.
But that's how you make sure they come back.
Yep. Yeah.
And then they connect it all. So, you know, my approach, which I didn't really get too into today, is reality pedagogy.
Yeah.
I gave the philosophy of it today, but it also comes with these tools. Mm-hmm. And like, so in the book, For White Folks Who Teach in the Hood, and the rest of y'all too, like, each of the chapters align to practices within reality pedagogy that are teacher practice. So that's the teacher part.
Okay, gotcha.
So we talk about the ciphers, the co-generative dialogues. We talk about co-teaching.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And how do you construct a classroom where young folks are allowed to teach And how do you give teachers, like, not only allowed to teach, but they actually take the whole lesson and they run the whole joint.
Right, right, right.
And how? What does the teacher do when the students are doing that? And how do you bite ideas from the kids?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because they become the teachers and they become facilitators.
Right. So it's like that kind of stuff. Then, you know, we have, I don't want to give it all away because we'll be here all night. You know what I mean?
No, don't.
If I could do all the C's, but, you know, we got cosmopolitanism, context, content, competition, curation, code switching, and all those things are
teacher tools
that can implement every single day. Once they keep in mind the larger philosophies, this becomes the path through which those philosophies get enacted daily.
Perfect. They can implement.
Right. On a district level, it's really about who's leading.
Tell me more about that.
Look, when you have a district, there are gradients to. You know, what happens oftentimes is you have the one person who has the grand vision, and then they distribute out roles for people who are in their arsenal who they feel have expertise within a particular domain.
Right.
The issue with that is that none of them have co-constructed a grand theory that they're using to implement the things going forward. So the data folks are like, oh, we're just doing all numbers. We're just going to make sure your numbers is right. The equity folks are like, yo, let's get kids free. But there's not a perception that the person who's doing data is seeing
doing the work through an equity lens,
and it's about the lenses you construct. Yeah. And so when you have the folks in charge not sharing a larger lens, a larger philosophy for doing the work, then it becomes really piecemeal. And then when you get the pieces, it never comes together. So it's really about how do you, and I oftentimes skip over the assistants. And I want to sit in a room with a person in charge to get where their head is at. And once you get them to understand the lens through which they can do things, and they can share that with folks who are enacting the practices. Another piece of this is, you know, we think teachers need professional development. Leadership needs professional development more than teachers do.
Say it again one more time.
No, leadership needs professional development actually more than the educator does.
Nice.
Because in essence, whatever the narrative that's constructed by the folks who are in that level is what gets implemented by the educator.
Exactly.
So if they're just soaking in research as it drops from the university somewhere in its haphazard, piecemeal way, then there's no way that they can find a grand narrative. It's all about constructing a grand narrative. If you don't have any identity, it's like if you go to media, like media studies, media relations, and you have a brand, and the brand wants to you know, sell their product to an audience, you know what the first thing they do is? They hire a brand manager. And the brand manager says to them, what is the narrative you want to sell? Like before Chili's got, I want my baby back ribs. Y'all think I'm playing. Somebody sits in the meeting and says, yo, what is the thing about Chili's that matters the most? They're like, yo, we sell chicken, we sell rice, we sell this, we sell that. But our anchor is our ribs though.
Ribs, yeah.
Y'all gonna come in and get all this other stuff regardless. But it's the ribs. Okay, if it's the ribs, how you gonna make the audience know that you bought that ribs life?
Yeah.
Right?
I love it.
That I'm going to construct a jingle.
Yo, I got this jingle.
Yeah.
I got this jingle.
And then all of a sudden it becomes now everybody knows that new jingle, and they identify the jingle with Chili's, and all of a sudden it sells itself. Right.
And we've got to bring, and you know, a lot of folks use the wrong parts of business models into education.
Oh, my God.
They make the students the products. But when you talk about a business model, it's about what you're trying to pitch to the world about who you are. Yeah. So that's the piece we need to focus on. And once we understand that, that's how you do it on a district level.
So tell me, and we've asked this from a couple of people about, like, what do districts do wrong? What do principals do wrong when we get a high caliber PD like today? Like, what are some typical mistakes that they do?
They never follow up. That's the biggest mistake. It don't matter who you got coming to set things on fire if you're not going to take the ideas and make sure they get implemented. That's number one. The second one is you have folks come in to do work, but you don't believe in the work.
Right.
You just had them in because it's like, you know, I got to get this budget thing. And so, you know, don't have nobody come into your district if you don't believe in what the person's saying.
Right.
I've turned districts down for money.
Yeah.
Like good money.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like my wife be like, yo, you sure you want to say no? You sure you want to say no to that, dog? Like, I'm people looking. But because I can tell from my dialogue with you whether or not you truly value my work or you just value my credentials.
Yeah, because you said that today. Like, some people just try to hire you out just to get your, oh, just we got an Ivy League.
Oh, by the way, we've got, you know, we got Professor Emden from Columbia. he's part of our consortium. You know what I mean? What? And it's like, you don't even know who I am.
Yeah, or what I do.
Or what I do. Because if you did, you might not want me to come.
Yeah.
And so I've done them a favor of saying I ain't coming.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you don't mind,
yeah.
Who gave you the call? Who pitched you Sweetwater?
Here, straight up Joe, man.
Yeah.
Joe hit up my folks like, yo, we want this dude to come through. And then we got on the phone and talked about the vision for actually doing things differently.
Mm.
And yo, I'm asking you to come in, not just because I'm asking you to come in, but look, we've done this work. We try to engage with the principals. Yeah. We had the homies come in beforehand and lay the groundwork for you. And so it's like, oh, these people are really about it.
Mm.
So let me come in and help push the agenda forward.
There you go.
But I've had folks come in that they don't believe in my work. They're like, oh, he's a New York Times bestseller. Have him come in.
Yeah. I've seen that.
You know what I mean? Or it's like provocative for the sake, like this would be a provocateur for the sake of it, so that I can have someone to critique later. People have me come in so they could critique me.
Bug. You bugging.
Yeah. That's why I just tell Cass.
Like you didn't already go through that.
Yeah. Like, come on, dog. Really? So those are some of the things that districts do wrong. And then, you know, it's also about, you know, you can't teach a person to be free and then create structures that incarcerate their minds and spirits and souls. You know what I mean? Like, it's like you can't talk the talk and don't create the conditions to allow the folks to be able to do what it is that you're asking them to do.
And you alluded to this today with students, and it was about trust and freedom.
It's everything.
Right. Trust and freedom is that's the equity piece, yep. Right? So does that mean that we need to be able to do that with our adults as well?
Absolutely.
Give them the agency and do that.
Because
what I've seen, sadly, is I see some principals who do a good job of like, yeah, you can do this and be you know, have some agency to do this, but you still got to do X, Y, Z. And then I see other principals who are just kind of like, no, you have to do X, Y, Z, blah, 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 submit your lesson plans now, this, that, the other, and it's become stifling.
You cannot expect a teacher to create a classroom where the kids feel trusted and free to be if the teacher itself, that themselves don't have that feeling.
That trust.
You know what I mean? Like, it filters down. Mm-hmm. It's got to be part of your philosophy.
And it goes all the way to the top.
Everybody.
So, the superintendent has to be able to enact trust with their principals.
We need superintendents.
Yeah.
We don't need, you know, friggin' slave drivers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We don't need folks on power trips. And so, if the superintendent... it is a leader who constructs the spaces for the folks to be free to do their work and trust them to do it. That right. filters right down in the classroom. And whenever you see a breakdown in that, it's because somewhere in that chain, there's a broken link. Right? Somewhere in that chain is a broken link.
And you know what's funny is I've heard that disguised, and the only reason I was giggling was because I've heard that disguised as defined autonomy. Hmm. And I looked at that and I kind of went, that's horseshit.
Well, people find ways to justify. I was talking. I was giving a talk the other day, and this lady came up to talk about mindfulness and self-regulation. And she says young folks of color in urban spaces need to learn how to be mindful and how to self-regulate. And so she's talking more, and I'm like, okay, the self-regulation discourse is, you know, connected to like larger, more so like Buddhist practices and mindfulness. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, yo, bro, you effed up the whole narrative. That's not what they meant. You want kids to self-regulate their own cultural expressions for the sake of your comfort.
Mm.
So technically, you're using self-regulation discourse,
right,
but utilizing that in a way to ensure that young folks can be free. So you want me to be mindful of how you get offended by me being myself?
Nah.
Nah, money.
Nah.
That's not mindfulness, my G.
Uh-huh. It's not.
So it's like, you know, it's like... people will construct these phrases, yeah, like, you know, it's
defined,
like,
autonomy.
Defined autonomy, you know, appropriate mindfulness.
Appropriate.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, youth self-regulation. I'm like, yo, come on, dog. Just say what you mean, which is that you want to be in charge and maintain the power that you have. And you can't deal with folks having the agency to be able to push back against you. And so because of that, you use phrases that signal emancipation,
yeah,
while your intention is the opposite.
Yeah, yeah. And then again, it just robs the people who work with you of the agency to do amazing work.
And then you're like, why aren't your students, you know, why aren't the students enacting, you know, XYZ practice? Why aren't the students aren't being able? Because you're not yourself.
Yes.
And you've not allowed the students, the teachers to be able to have that.
Yeah.
So look, I know you don't want to talk too much about tomorrow, but again, what we're recording tonight is also for people that couldn't make it out today.
Copy. Right?
So give us a jewel from tomorrow that you want to share with those listeners, please.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as we run through those C's of reality pedagogy, it's a couple things. I mean, you know, one, tomorrow we're going to talk about marketing.
I love it.
Now, we're going to talk about marketing. We want to talk about how are the educators marketing their product, which is the content that they're delivering to the young people in the most effective way. Mm. Right? Like, you know, and I think it's a piece of this work that nobody likes to talk about. Like, what do you mean marketing? Like, you got to sell it. Like, how can you sell science and make it sexy?
Yeah.
And how do you take the time out to ensure that your presentation of that content is a way that connects authentically? So I'm gonna share them jewels. And then, you know, I really want to talk about code switching a little bit more. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, I alluded to it a little bit earlier today, but like, you know, all of us in this room right now, like the three of us right now, have gotten to where we are because we know how to code switch.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Absolutely.
And we learned that through bad experiences, good experiences, parental connections, people that we watch, and we learned it. And there's hundreds and thousands of young people who will never get the opportunity to develop that skill set. And because of that, they get locked out of places in the world, mm-hmm. right? And how do we ensure that we teach them deliberately through actual practices in classrooms daily how to code switch? Mm. You know what I mean? Like, so for example, like, you know, how do you
tell me more?
How do you use different forms of language in different spaces?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right?
Like, how do you learn? Yes. Like, you know, light is light, L-I-G-H-T, but light could be spelled L-Y-T-E, and one is a wrong spelling, but they both can represent the same imagery. Mm-hmm. Mm. And light particles are called photons. And so how do you use photon, light, and L-I-G-H-T in three different sentences in the same class at the same time? Mm. And then how do you tell young folks, okay, this one's for the test, this one's for here, this one's for the hood?
That's what's up.
Yeah, that's what's up.
You know what I mean? And let them know that. Like, don't hide that from them. Let them know, like, this is good in these multiple spaces.
And be intentional about it.
And be intentional. Right. And I always talk about, I couple that tomorrow, I'm going to share about how do you do that as you engage in imagination exercises. Because sometimes we learn how to code switch because we've had the agency to be able to go to different places and observe things. Like, that skill set comes out of being able to navigate the world. Experiences. Mm-hmm. So if a young person is locked into their hood and can't get out, you got to take them on trips that their mind takes them to.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So how do you close your eyes and you tell them, right now, y'all, we are in the middle of England on a campus at Oxford, and there's mad professors, and this is what it looks like. And when they open their eyes, the smart board is in the middle of Oxford on Google Earth.
That's dope.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And literally take them on a journey where you can activate their imagination to believe that they're somewhere that they're not, and then utilize the language for that space through the act of code switching.
Right.
So that when they ever get access to those spaces, they've already been there, even though they physically have not.
Right.
And, you know, that imagination work is so valuable because contemporary education robs students of the opportunities to utilize the imagination, just like it robs them of this idea of being vocational.
Right.
Right.
And see, that's why I love, and for me, after school and the expanded learning space is so important.
Absolutely.
The first piece was like the marketing, right? We have the unique task of selling more school to students, right? So, right? So that's a challenging task. But so we have to be hotter than the core day,
right?
You know what I mean? But then the second piece about giving them the opportunities and the experiences that they otherwise wouldn't get, that's the transformative piece of expanded learning that I think the core day could do a better job of it by looking at quality after school programs and then implementing them in the day.
We just don't look at anything other than ourselves, which is why we all lose. Mm-hmm. If you talk about going back to hip hop, I always talk about hip hop and everything, right? Hip hop evolves to reflect the needs of the audiences and reflect their perspectives as well. Mm. Like reggaeton gets birthed out of the increase of Latino populations who have their own sensibilities musically.
Yeah.
So you don't lose the hip hop, you construct something new. Mm. Trap hop emerges out of folks who have a sensibility towards really more scant, distinct rhythmic traditions. Mm-hmm. So hip hop evolves to reflect and pull up on that. You listen to like Maori hip hop or like indigenous hip hop,
right.
It speaks right to their authentic selves, but also to the contemporary. You talk about dance hall, how dance hall is like just, it's straight up old school reggae mixed with hip hop, mixed with like, it's always this hybridization is the essence of it. And any field of study who cannot learn how to reflect the times and become more hybrid becomes extinct.
And that's what we're facing.
So contemporary schooling feels, sounds extinct.
Yeah. Yeah.
Until it could get to incorporate new things into it.
And get their shit together.
They have to.
I'm going to pull away from education and pedagogy. All right. You talk a lot about hip-hop, right?
Me
and my wife don't drive to work together no more because she can't listen to hip-hop in the morning. And I'm just, that gets me fired up, right? Yeah. So out here in Cali, we're real big on reggae. When I'm with my wife and we're chilling out, we usually listen to reggae.
Okay.
What about you, man? If you're not listening to hip-hop, what's keeping you going? What
reggae,
you listening to?
So, my project, Science Genius, we actually start doing Science Genius Jamaica.
That's right.
Jamaica is utilizing the same processes in Science Genius, except we're using dancehall music because dancehall is what connects to the audiences in Jamaica.
Yeah.
I'm big on reggae right now. Like, my favorite artist right now, you know, big up to, I'm going to send him the podcast when we're all done. Big up
Shout
to my homie Assassin.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Agent Sasko, who's like my favorite reggae artist of all time.
Word.
And, you know, he's just like so, his new single, Winning.
We'll put a link in the podcast.
Oh, my God. I play Winning in the morning, and I just feel like I could conquer the world. So I'm a big reggae dude, a big dance hall dude. I love a lot of electronica as well. You know what I'm saying? I love Fortet.
Okay.
Fortet is just my crew. They just dropped a new album.
Ooh.
It's just like instrumental music. But here's the thing with Fortet, like it's electronic, a little hip hop,
uh-huh.
a little pop.
Ooh.
You know what I'm saying? Some soul samples, and it's like musical gumbo. You know what I'm saying? So I love Fortet.
No music, just pure beats, pure sound.
Yeah. It's just sound.
Do you listen to music when you write?
I listen to Fortet a lot when I write.
Okay.
I can't write in silence.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Really?
Yeah, silence is violence, dog. Yeah. If it gets too quiet, it's too loud.
Yeah, it's just weird, huh?
It's awkward.
It is a little weird.
So I'm listening to a little bit of everything, man. You know, a little old school. You know what I'm saying? I got my 70s soul playlist.
There you go.
You know, can't go wrong with some Marvin Gaye and some Stevie Wonder, you know, some Otis Redding. So, you know, I listen to a little bit of everything.
That's dope.
But hip-hop is like my main driver. I mean, that's the driving force. That's your main squeeze. That's the heartbeat, man.
I think we should carry it out on that note, okay? I know you probably, like, over the course of all your traveling, all your talking, I'm sure you got a bunch of rhymes that just stick out to you about what it is that you do and what you're about, okay? Whether they're your rhymes or whether they're some of your favorite MC's rhymes, right? You got some?
At the end of the day, I'm still an MC, you know what I mean? So I could spit other people's verses, but I love to spit my own, you know what I mean, if and when I can. So
I'm gonna give you a beat, and I'm gonna give you a good New York beat.
Okay.
And I think you're going to appreciate it. So let's see how it goes.
What you got for us?
Oh man, now you're gonna make me spit for real. Check it out, I flow like this. Last name Emden, first name Chris. Whack MCs get dismissed. And I spit just like this. The only man better than me is embedded in me. You bury me, I resurrect so effortlessly. Label me, disable me. They said they saw no changes. I said, Chris from the Bronx, dog, he ain't gonna make it. So they talked about Trump and the way he portrays this. All I can say is look at the media and the way it portrays this. How that phenomenon's got so many layers. How the way I look when the camera's on affects the way that they greatest. But I'm still the greatest like Ali.
Yeah.
Probably improperly and awkwardly, they got me locked with mediocrity. But that prophecy was pure hypocrisy. They couldn't stop me, should've locked me in a green light, I move on red, then I flip hip-hop on his head with hip-hop ed, and dead hip-hop that was force-fed from the feds, then fed the congregation with lyrical syncopation, and blow up spots like a pregnant Dalmatian. It's amazing when I'm blazing, you adjacent with no relation. I made Christopher Reeves give me a standing ovation when I'm blazing. That was disrespectful, but anyway, I still flip till my mind is full, cause I'm mindful. Rhymes all day, they get displayed. MCs get blazed. I walk in the classroom, all I do was teach. Matter of fact, sometimes I teach so good, they say I preach.
Dr. Chris Emden, you know I mean? Fuck with you on so many levels right now.
Good looking, dude,
that freestyle was fire.
Good looking, my G.
I'm over here dead, son.
It's the work.
My man.
Yo, that's a dope way to end the episode 24. Dr. Chris Emden in the house. He's so easy to find on social media, but I want to pump up hashtag HipHopEd.
Yes.
Tuesday nights, 6 p.m. on the West Coast, 9 p.m. on the East Coast. education discussion on Twitter, hashtag hip hop ed.
Join the discussion. Make sure that you be a part of it, man.
Yeah.
Man.
And I just want to say before we close out, man, how much I deeply appreciate both of y'all cats, man, for your honesty, for your truth, for doing this for the educators, and being such authentic, real dudes. I salute to y'all for your work.
Man.
Man, we appreciate that here on the episode, the Educated Guest, episode 24. Man, we out, man. Thank you. Thank you, Rodrigo.
That's a wrap.
That's a wrap.
My man.
We're going to edit all that out.